Okay, but so the title of the talk is rather technical, but I will try. I mean, actually, I will try to make a fun of it because as a kind of an example for demonstrating these technical tricks, right? I mean, I will take an interesting physical problem, right? And actually, this technical stuff which I'm going to talk about basically help to solve one of the kind of non-trivial and quite long-lasting problems in hadronic physics. So basically, okay. So I will in general consider the matching of lattice non-relativistic QCD, and one may think that, well, I mean, the non-relativistic QCD was formulated almost 30 years ago, and matching is, of course, one of the most conceptually important part of this effective theory. Right, so like one may ask, what else should one learn about this? I mean, probably everything is already known, but it turns out that it is not, right? And there are some really subtle points in the matching procedure, especially for the lattice non-relativistic QCD. And like it turns out to be very important for the physical applications, right? And I will just consider these subtle points, right, of the matching, taking the very well-known ETB mass puzzle as a working example, right? So before, it's actually a very good example of how like the physical problem like are created and solved. Right, we will go through all the steps. So here is a sketch of my talk, and first of all, I'm going to introduce this physical problem, ETB mass puzzle, so which is basically quite a severe discrepancy between various QCD lattice predictions and experimental predictions for the mass of the ground state of BB bar mesons, right? So it's ground state spin zero meson. So everybody knows ground state spin one epsilon meson, right? So they're very well studied. But ETB has been actually discovered only recently. So and actually the discovery also initiated all this discussion. So after introducing this puzzle, right, the physical problem, I will sketch the non-relativistic QCD theory of heavy quarkonium. So I will go quickly through the main concept. I will just show how this concept can be applied to get a perturbative description of the system, and then how this framework can be used to put the system on the lattice. Right, and finally, I will come to the main research part of the talk, and this is the matching of lattice non-relativistic QCD. I will show that there are like different prescriptions for this, and one of them, which I'm going to use, is based on the expansion of non-relativistic QCD about continuum limit, of course, perturbative. Right, and another one is kind of a standard one, which is naive numerical matching approach. And surprisingly, these two different approaches, they are not equivalent. They differ by so-called Coulomb artifacts, so which some terms which vanish in continuum limit, but like somehow which affect the extraction of the physical quantity from the lattice result. And you will see that it should be like this Coulomb artifact should be very accurately considered to remove any ambiguity and to get the correct value, right, for the physical quantity, for in our case for the ETB mass, right? So the talk is based mainly on the very recent result obtained with my postdoc and my student. So it has just been accepted for the publication in JHEP. So, and I will also mention the result of two other papers, right? So also quite recent paper and my first paper on lattice non-relativistic QCD, right? And quite an old perturbative result obtained more than 10 years ago with my German colleagues, right? So. Okay, what is let me start the physical part of the talk, right? So what is hyperfine splitting? So basically, the again, the mass difference, hyperfine splitting will be the center of my discussion, right? And this is exactly the difference between the spin one state and spin zero state, right? So, and since this quantity, the spin one, the mass of the spin one state is very well known. So the, if you know the hyperfine splitting, you know the mass of eta b, right? So the, you can say that eta b mass puzzle is equivalent to the hyperfine splitting puzzle, whatever. Right, so again, so this is just a BB bar system with spin equal to zero. This is BB bar system with spin equal one. So, good. So, and what is the problem? Right, and as I already mentioned, quite a long time ago, we got using non-relativistic QCD and renormalization group improved non-relativistic QCD, we got this a kind of first principle prediction for the hyperfine splitting, right? And it was, you see, in the year 2004. Sorry, delta alpha s is refers to the uncertainty here, right? So it's uncertainty due to the input value of alpha s, right? So, and this is basically theoretical expansion, theoretical uncertainty related to truncation of perturbation theory to non-perturbative phenomena. And like after actually 4 years after this publication, Babar reported the first observation of the of eta b, and the mass which they measured. Like you can see that it was almost twice as large as our prediction. And this is a kind of very bad because you have a very heavy system, right, ground state. So something where some a system where perturbative QCD is supposed to work, right, somehow, not be off by a factor of two. Right, so, and this actually created quite a lot of discussion. Right, and like, I mean, there were like one obvious suggestion was like it's a failure of perturbative QCD, which again, it would be extremely strange for such a system which is supposed to be perturbative. So like, basically because it probes QCD at quite a short distance, right? So, and people even try to insert something which I hate, right? I mean, so like new physics, right? So people think that maybe CP odd Higgs is mixed with eta b, right? And this results in the shift in the mass. But of course, I mean, and people publish in physical review letters, but one cannot actually take this very seriously. Huh? Yeah. So, and but actually this discrepancy initiated a very like a serious discussion, right? And new results came, but the problem remains, right? I mean, and it was very interesting, right? I mean, you can see how all this scientific society works. So you see the first, I mean, this is our result, then this is the first experimental observation. Then after this, there was the first prediction from non-relativistic, lattice non-relativistic QCD, which include next to leading order matching. And you see it's in a perfect agreement with the experiment. But the same year, Baba came with a different result, right? And you can see that these results are not compatible, actually, right? So they roughly speaking, they contradict each other, right? So, and this result actually report much better accuracy, much less error. And you can see that in a year, the lattice estimate magically drifted down, and you can just compare it. It's exactly the average of this and this experimental results. So, and we decided that we cannot leave it unpunished, right? And we should figure out what is going on in this lattice evaluations. And we came up with our own analysis, right, based on the non-perturbative lattice simulations within the perturbatively improved non-relativistic QCD, and we got this result, right? And if you just compare this, this is compatible, roughly speaking, with this and with this, right? So, yeah, and we never changed our value.
So, one thing you have to notice, everybody's underestimating their errors.
Yeah, so let me, yeah, look, so just let me give you a few ideas why we should trust one result and shouldn't trust another, and let me start with the experiment. It's true, and they changed it to a game because, yeah, I will tell you, they changed it once more, because there is an erratum to the paper, right, but anyhow. So you can just, yeah, in principle, it's compatible, right, I mean, so it's... If you just consider, this is compatible with this, but there is a quite difference between this and this, right? So, and if you look at the, error bars, you see that actually the difference between the central value is larger than the error bars. And this analysis basically is based on the same lattice simulation. So the difference is due to the different perturbative contribution, which is very strange. Right, and this is actually the subject of the paper, right? So yeah, and the subject of the talk. So why these two estimates, which are based on exactly the same lattice data, but differ only by the matching procedure, they give significantly different.
That kind of brings up a question. Yeah? When they say plus or minus 6.7, what is it that they're modifying
by that? How do they get that? This. It includes discretization error, the uncertainty in the lattice spacing, which they may, okay, so some parameters which they use, and the uncertainty related to truncation of the perturbation theory because it's only next to leading coda. So it's all together, right? And of course, you add everything up in quadrature, right?
So the same group gave you those two numbers, 70 plus or minus 9.
Ah, you mean this and this?
Yeah.
Here they included the high dimensional operators. So, like, I mean, they use relativistic corrections in the action. So this is why they jump from here to here, right? So, like, I mean, and in print, yeah.
But to jump by less than 1.
Yeah, it's within the sigma, right? Yeah, that is not a problem. Okay, so. Let's consider the experiment, and this is basically the plot of the bump which these guys measured, right, at Babar. So it's like they measure the energy of the photon when excited epsilon decays in eta b, right? But of course, in reality, they do not see this. What they see is something like this, and the bump which you see has nothing to do with eta b. So it's completely different guy, and only when you subtract non-resonant background, you see actually huge resonance, small resonance, and the smallest resonance. And the smallest resonance is the one which you're interested in. So how did they manage to get such a good accuracy by extracting the position of the resonance with such a huge background? I mean, I do not know. And this is exactly the question which I asked them. And they said, don't worry. Right? And, it turns out that apparently the discrepancy between them and they basically subtracted resonant background in the wrong way. Right, so there is a rumor. Okay, so if you look at Bell, right, so you can immediately see that they consider the decays of spin zero one p state, right, in theta b, right, and they produce these guys hadronically, so they don't have this huge resonance background, right? So they have a flat background, a very well pronounced resonance, so the accuracy is much better. So I think now everybody agrees that one should just see this this result as a question, right?
This one is kind of 0.5 sigma away from your
issue. Yeah, it's I mean they even in the paper they. Wrote that the discrepancy is significantly relaxed, so it's practically within the one sigma. It's within one sigma. So, what about theory? And again, so let me, as I promised, set up the framework. And the framework is standard, and you know this very well. So, what you do, you take the Lagrangian of QCD, and you integrate out the hard modes with the virtuality of order of the Heaviport mass. And what you get an effective Lagrangian, which includes non-relativistic quarks, right? You have here the expansion in the standard expansion of the kinetic energy. And here you have the standard interaction of magnetic field, external magnetic field, with spin momentum of quark, so like Pauli magnetic interaction. But this is not at the end of the story. In principle, you can go further and integrate out the mods, which has a virtuality of characteristic momentum of the bound state, which is heavy quark velocity times the heavy quark, right? And if you do this, so you don't have any gluon field in the derivative, so you basically have a Schrödinger operator, so you have an effective Schrödinger theory. And of course, you still have, I mean, this bound state, which you get in the Schrödinger theory, interacts through multiple expansions with a very soft ultrasoft, so-called ultrasoft gluon, right? So this is a chromoelectric field, which interacts with the dipole moment of the bound state. So, so the difference is that here you have soft gluons, and here the soft gluons are integrated out, and you have potentials, basically Schrödinger system. So, and how does it, just a very simple example, how does it look for the spin flip operator, which basically generates the difference between the masses of the state? So if you look at the first step, at the non-relativistic QCD, right, you have something like this. It's again, chromomagnetic interaction to the heavy quark spin, right? And in principle, you can write down like a spin-dependent term, local spin-dependent interaction described by the Fulkerman operator, right? So with some coefficient. So okay, and if you go further, right? If you just integrate out soft mods, so you don't have soft B here, right? So you basically construct a potential for effective for quark interaction, which is a potential, right? Independent potential, and it's given by a very well-known formula, right? So it's a kind of, it's in momentum space, so in coordinates, it does not depend on momentum, so in coordinate space is delta function. And here you have S capital is the total sum, total spin, sorry, of the system, right? So it, you see, it generates this hyperfine splitting, and the coefficient in this potential is composed into the from this Wilson coefficient. So all the information about the hard modes are sitting in these coefficients, and they somehow translate into this potential. So, and now the question, I mean, now you have basically an alternative, right? You have an alternative. What to do further? Right. First of all, you can consider the soft mod to be perturbative, right? So, which is not, I mean, the soft scale is about 2 GV, right? So, in principle, it's not that bad, right? So, you can try to integrate out this soft mods perturbatively and get some potential, and using this potential, plug it into the Schrödinger equation and solve it for the spectrum and get the splitting, right? And it will be fully perturbative result. So, you get spectrum as a series in alpha. Right, and
remind me, the soft modes, are those the ones that are ordered alpha n or the ones that are ordered
on the square?
Sorry? What's the definition of
soft mode? Of what?
Soft mode.
Soft mode is like, okay, so the momentum is, okay. The momentum should be, this is alpha, right? So the characteristic velocity of a quark, yeah. So it's alpha, yeah. So it's alpha times m, right? So, and it's about 2 GV for bottom system, right? So it's not that bad, right? So you can do this, and there are pros and cons, right? So the pros is obvious. I mean, you get a very nice result with a series in alpha, right? You can just look at it and enjoy. And the cons are also obvious. There is always some guy whining about the non-perturbative, which you don't somehow have a control over. So, like, if you would like to satisfy such a guy, right? I mean, so you should choose a kind of a different approach. So you should basically say that, okay, we have hard mods with the virtuality of order of m, which are completely perturbative. So you perturbatively compute these Wilson coefficients, and then you take the resulting effective action, effective Lagrangian, and put it on a lattice. Right, and then basically you take into account the soft modes, right, which are not efficient, like non-perturbatively, so nobody will complain. So, and again, there are pros and cons,
and the prose are exactly the opposite. Nobody complains about uncontrollable non-perturbative effect. And quantas, of course, I mean, it's a kind of a chemistry. You don't have numbers. I mean, you have some data points. And for a series, it's a kind of...
You're saying the liner is basically right.
Sorry?
You're saying the liner is basically right.
Yes. Yes, I mean, you get better accuracy. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but I mean, it's aesthetically worse, but of course, I mean, it's, I mean, you basically don't have any question about non-perturbative physics, right? I mean, so it's taken into account from the first principles. No models, nothing.
This is something that's specific to QCD, right? The non-perturbativeness is not the finding of the meson, it's the fact of the
spin. It's yeah, it's basically like, I mean, yeah, it's a question like the soft modes, you have alpha s, right, at sufficiently low scale, whether it's good or not, right? I mean, whether the series which you get is convergent or not, roughly speaking, like this, right? So, first of all, and then you have also take into account the fluctuations like very low, like at the scale of lambda QCD, right? Which, in principle, you can estimate using like a Pareto product expansion like Walowski and Lutwiller, right? So, but the estimates are extremely loose, right? I mean, you don't get a number. So, basically, nobody knows like what is the kind of non-perturbative contribution in the first formulation.
But the same issue would not have arisen in
QED. Yes, there is nothing, right? Yeah, definitely not. So it's only QCD, and so just to show you the difference between two approaches, let me just present the result, like the perturbative result, like in continuum. So this is a hyper. I mean, it's really nice, right? We got it quite a long time ago, right? And it's very nice. The explicit dependence here on the quantum number, principal quantum number n, and the formula basically includes beside the standard color factors, it includes Euler constant, e Euler psi function, logarithmic derivative of the gamma function, right? So very nice, compact, but of course the question of non-perturbative contribution is still. So what happens on the lattice? So first of all, why people use lattice non-relativistic QCD? Why one just not put everything like the full QCD right on the lattice, and then you will not have any problem with matching and so and all the things, right? So it will be much simpler. And it turns out that it's not possible, right? Why? Because not to have a kind of finite size effect, you should have your lattice which is sufficiently large, right? So the size of the lattice should be larger than the characteristic hadronic size, right? It should be 1 over lambda, right? Yeah, otherwise, yeah, it should be 1 over lambda, right? So otherwise, you just cut off some hadronic effects and you don't get the correct result. On the other hand, the bottom quark is very heavy. And if you would like to put the relativistic big quark on the lattice, you should use the lattice spacing, which is much smaller than 1 over MD. Right. And then if you compare this and this, you see that you should basically have such a huge lattice that it's not supported by modern hardware. So they cannot put it on the lattice in a relativistic way, right? So, the idea to use lattice non-relativistic QCD is a kind of very relevant. So in this sense, I mean, you basically say that the lattice size is a kind of factorization scale between hard and soft modes, right? So everything which is, so you put it in between the hard and soft scale, right? And everything which is above is perturbative, right? You can compute it using perturbation theory somehow accommodate it into the, put it into the Wilson coefficients. And what you have on the lattice is actually the soft long wave scale fluctuations, right? So, which are obviously below the cutoff. So, again, the idea is, very, very, very simple. So, this is a cutoff, this part, this part of the momentum space is taken into account through the Wilson coefficient, and this one is somehow taken into account within the lattice simulations, right? So, you see that you cannot just, basically,
The scale must be smaller than MB, otherwise non-relativistic QCD doesn't work, right? So you have to compute everything at the finite lattice spacing, and since you have a finite lattice spacing, you should at the end remove all the lattice artifacts. And this means that you basically have to extrapolate the result which you get to A equal to zero, just to remove all unnecessary terms which are not physical, right? The proportional to A. Okay.
So
Of V, it's 1/10. It's quite, yeah. I mean, this is, yeah. It's yeah. Yes, yeah. So, good. And, okay, let's have a look how it works, right? So, and again, I mean, let me show once more this, the Lagrangian of non-relativistic.
Yeah, I'm just going
to fix it. I don't need it. I mean.
It sounds muffled.
Okay. So, you have this Lagrangian and the Wilson coefficients here and here, right? So, and this is quite a famous Wilson coefficient, right? Because it starts with one, which gives you a Pauli magnetic moment, right, of a quark. And the correction to this is responsible, for example, for the anomalous moment, magnetic moment of electron, right? So, for which Schwinger got Nobel Prize. So, and it's known very well, right? I mean, so it's computed on the lattice. There is no question here. Everything is more or less unambiguous. So if you go to the second term, which describes the local for fermion interaction, so here we have problems, right? So it's basically determined by cross section, right? Of you see, it's for fermion interaction, so it's determined by. By the amplitude, not cross section, by the amplitude, scattering amplitude, which is one particle irreducible. So I will just come to this point on the next slide, right, to show what does it mean, right? So, and for the calculation of this guy, there are actually two contradictory results, which basically this difference actually explains the difference between the prediction for this lattice non-relativistic QCD prediction for the hyperfine splitting. So. Okay, so good. And at the operational, explicitly, what this coefficient D stands for. Basically, as I told you, it basically takes into account the hard mods which contribute to the one particle irreducible amplitude. So how does one compute it? Basically, one computes all the one-particle reducible diagrams in QCD, which contain all the mods, right? Then you compute it in non-relativistic QCD, right, on the lattice. And then you don't have the contribution of the hard mods, and you take the difference between them, and it purely the contribution of the hard mods, and you should include it into the Wilson coefficient, right? So, if you do this, right, and if you write down the result, I mean, it's quite a simple calculation in full QCD, right? So it's just for fermion amplitude. So you have here the for fermion operator. And this result, it's the simplest way to perform the matching is to consider the simplest possible kinematics. And the simplest possible kinematics is, of course, when you have everything on threshold and the particles are on shell. So you don't have any kinematical variable at all, right? Everything is zero except the mass. So, but in this case, of course, you get infrared divergence. And here I introduce a kind of gluon mass to regulate it. And there is a standard logarithm. Infrared logarithm from the soft gluon exchange, right, which everybody knows very well. This part is separated because it's annihilation, so you can forget about it. It's irrelevant. It's just annihilation contribution. It only it's purely hard, so the matching for it is trivial, right? So, and except the, besides the logarithm, you have also a very interesting contribution which has a power divergence when lambda goes to zero. And this is a kind of a remnant of Coulomb singularity. You know that if you have a binding effect, Coulombic binding effect, or if you just consider the scattering of two massive quarks at the threshold, like the amplitude is proportional, inverse proportional to the velocity. So when velocity goes to zero, you have a divergence, right? Since, and here we consider everything on threshold, so velocity is equal to zero. So to have to regulate this divergence, which you have, I introduce the mass, and instead of 1 over v, I have 1 over lambda. And this is actually, obviously, it comes from Coulomb exchange, so, and it's responsible for the binding effect, right? Because, like, you remember that in the bound state, the velocity is proportional to alpha, to the coupling constant, so you have alpha in numerator, right? Alpha in numerator and alpha in denominator. So adding more and more Coulomb gluons basically doesn't give any additional suppression, so you have to resum all the Coulomb gluons. You have to solve the Schrödinger equation for the Coulomb potential and get the bound state, right? So it's because this is matching, so we don't need Coulomb, right? Matching is for hard modes, you don't have it, right? So, and obviously, since the infinite property of full QCD and non-relativistic QCD are exactly the same, so the dependence on lambda on infinite regulator is exactly the same in both. So when you take the difference, it disappears, right? So, and again, if you perform the same calculation but using non-relativistic QCD, lattice non-relativistic QCD Feynman rules, you must get something like this, right? Because you have exactly the same Coulomb singularity in QCD and non-relativistic QCD, you will get basically some constant here, right? Right, which you difficult to find because you have to really perform one loop calculations with the lattice propagators and vertices, which are kind of crazy stuff. One vertex can be as large as a few pages of code, right? So, and of course, you have here, you have corrections, right? So this is a leading result for small a, and you have corrections which are suppressed by, right? So then again, so what is goal of this? What is the purpose of the introduction of the Wilson coefficient, right? It's literally to match the full theory amplitude to the effective theorem, right? So basically, to get this out of this, you should add the full quark interaction with this potential, with this coefficient, right? You can just check that if you add the full quark operator with this coefficient to this, you exactly reproduce this, right? So this means that effective theory and full theory give the same scattering amplitudes, and this is a kind of goal of matching. So the question is how to compute, it's important to notice that there are terms which are suppressed by A, so-called lattice artifacts, right? So how does one compute it, or how did we compute it, right? We had a kind of very powerful technique. We can actually expand the Feynman rules, the lattice Feynman rules about the continuum limit. This is a kind of a funny situation. So literally, you take the expression which you obtain on the lattice, right, which is extremely complicated, and then you can systematically expand it before integration, right, or before loop integration, and get the result for a given coefficient that you desire in front of a given power of A. So it's a kind of a very elegant way to compute this coefficient. So which, you can call it expansion about continuum limit, right? And an interesting thing is that if you take the simplest possible action, you can even get this coefficient here, right? This delta is just this one, right? Some constant here. You can even get it in analytical form. So here, B3 and B2 are some irrational constants, which are very well known for lattice people, right? So for realistic action, which is used for the simulation, of course, it's not possible. You have to modify a little bit. You have to go numeric, and this is the result. But nobody cares, right? So, and this is literally, so we neglect everything which is suppressed by A, because after all, we have to neglect all these lattice artifacts that are not necessary, right? So, Yeah. You can have, yeah, I mean, this is a good, yeah, this is a kind of a good point, but there is a folklore that non-relativistic UCD doesn't exist when A goes to zero. And this means actually that you have contour terms which behave like 1 over AM. So if you are working in a given order of perturbation theory, you always can just renormalize it, right? So you, since your lattice calculation, of course, it's all order, right? I mean, you cannot do this, right? So like, you can only remove all the singular terms in a given order. So what people do, people go to such a large A. So all the terms, which bad terms, which goes like 1 over m A, they're numerically small and can be neglected. And the price which one pays for this is that you have a huge lattice artifacts, right? So and you somehow have to get rid of it. So in the finite order, in finite loops, there is no problem, one can expand. One will get some singular terms, right? 1 over m A, right? But who cares? I mean, it's, yeah, okay. It's just a contour term, right? You remove it and that's it. So this, there is no problem. All right, so again, so but you're right. I mean, you will get terms which are singular in A. Okay, so, and this is, okay. One can actually use a kind of more straightforward and naive procedure. So one can, instead of expanding an A, one can basically perform the numerical calculation of the amplitude for a given A, right? And get the result for the amplitude and like by the difference with UCD amplitude, get this coefficient. And in this case, of course, it's not just a simple number. Of course, and this is the annihilation part. Nobody cares, I mean, it's universal. The logarithm is also universal. But here, instead of just a constant delta, you have some function of a single scaleless variable, which you have in the problem. And this is A times M, right? And in principle, one can expand this in A. And answering your question, N starts with negative numbers, right? So in principle. Right, and if you compute this coefficient numerically, you have a stable numerical result. Of course, you should go to a sufficiently large A, such so that AM is larger than 1. So in practice, AM is 2, 3, something like this, right? So all the singular terms, like they somehow numerically small, and people just worries about it, and they somehow keep an eye on it. So, so basically, I mean, if you have a numerical result, you can actually try to extract the coefficient of the expansion. And if you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, do we have to really trust this series?
No, I mean, this is some function. I just expanded. I mean, I write it down in the form, right? I mean, so it's some function.
Okay. But MA is large.
And it, yeah, and that, but yeah, exactly. But then MA is large because otherwise you don't have a numerical stability because of terms with negative n, right? So it's computed always for A where actually this expansion shouldn't work. Right. But somehow it works. And you can see, I mean, basically you can fit, I mean, you can take the numerical, normally these people, they give a numerical result at 3 points, unfortunately, right? So you can fit it with only linear function with 3 points. And you can get the coefficients. And the fits are actually very good, right? I mean, the real numbers, they are fitted with the linear function very well. Better than I think it actually is, right? So, it's a kind of lucky situation. And then, I mean, since you get this result, you can compare it to, for example, you remember that what we do, we immediately get, like within our method, we immediately get the coefficient in front of n equal to 0, right? We expand an A. So, and this, so we can just relate this, the coefficient in this series to our parameter delta, right? Which was on the previous slide, right? Which we even know analytically for simple action. So, and we can substitute the numbers, and if you compare, you see that's pretty close. Right, because the accuracy here is nobody knows. As you mentioned, like the series is not, in principle, it should not be very well convergent. But somehow it happens that it's, I mean, if we had more points, probably we would be able to like make this extraction more precise.
So is there a way of phrasing the logic of it? Because it must be very hard to quantify the error.
Yes, because, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So is there a way of phrasing it where you're not really relying on the series?
You see that basically the numbers are pretty much on the one line. I mean, you have data. Yes, yeah, yeah. So, and yeah, that's it, right? So somehow the coefficients, the priors for the coefficients here should be of order of one, as you can see. But somehow, like by miracle, I don't know by what reason, I mean, the linear function is pretty.
I mean, but you are interested in this coefficient at small a, right?
So yeah, I mean, we are interested. Yeah, we are interested. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's a bit.
It's very funny. It's very, very funny logic, but it works. Yeah, because I mean, you compute it for large a, then so you all the singular terms do not contribute here. They're numerically suppressed, and then you kill artifacts by extrapolating to a. So first you remove singular terms numerically, so you compute everything. This is how it works.
Before you did it,
But this is this is done not by us. This is done by these guys, right? Yeah. So,
yeah.
No, this is a standard situation in this business, right? I mean, they go for sufficiently large a, get numbers like very stable numeric numbers because again, so singular terms are suppressed, and then they of course say they do not want to have all these artifacts which are unphysical to contribute. They extrapolate everything to zero. So they remove singular terms numerically, like by computing. I mean, and if you compute at sufficiently large a, everything breaks down because you cannot extrapolate right to zero. So there is a very, very narrow interval of a, not very narrow, but it's basically from 2 to 4, right? I mean, for this quantity, where basically the expansion still works. So you can use it to extract the value at a equal to zero, but the terms which with negative n, they are numerically small. They do not give any contribution to the data.
So why do you want to extrapolate a equals zero?
Because and this is this is a good because you do not know. I mean, you cannot perform matching for the artifacts. The artifacts are not perturbative. You have a dependence, right, of your result, right? I mean, basically, on the lattice, you have a contribution from long distance, right? Lambda times a. Hmm? You have I mean, this coefficient actually, this coefficients basically get contributions from. Like from all, I mean, they get Coulombic contribution, right? From all of this. I mean, you can actually try. I mean, yeah, I will tell you, right? I mean, so in a moment, why you cannot use finite a. Okay, because you cannot. I mean, so in principle, you can say that you use finite a, you compute the Wilson coefficient, which should actually cancel this a dependence, right? Of your lattice result, but it turns out to be wrong. So because these terms with the high powers of a, they get Coulombic contribution and non-perturbative contribution. So you cannot compute it, and the only way to get rid of them is just to extrapolate to zero. Yeah.
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 Because I don't know what you're going to do with delta. Would that be good enough for anyone?
Sorry.
I don't know what you're
going to
do with delta once you found it. So
with delta, I mean, okay. So you, in principle, that's it, right? I mean, when if you find delta zero in our approach, you just substitute it to the Wilson coefficients, and that's it, right? So and what they do, they substitute this to the Wilson coefficient. So since the difference between our prescription and their prescription is proportional to a, so after you extrapolate to zero, there should be no difference, right? So in principle, everything should be consistent. But there is one subtle point which I'm going to address very soon, right? So why you cannot do this, right? I mean, where you get the difference? So, but again, so let me just repeat the main idea here, right? So you cannot perform the calculation for small a because you have negative powers. So you can only perform the calculation for sufficiently large a, right? Then you get the result for this function, the numerical result, right? So you basically introduce the Wilson coefficient with this Wilson coefficient into your calculation, and then you can say, okay, let's just keep a fixed. But what you see that you have a huge dependence on a, because this perturbatively computed Wilson coefficient for high powers of a, they do not remove all the dependence on a, right? So it's not the whole result, right? You cannot compute the whole dependence on a perturbatively. There is a non-perturbative contribution, Coulombic contribution, which I'm going to discuss, right? So the only way is extrapolate to zero, get these numerical points, extrapolate to zero, and remove all this unnecessary terms, right?
I thought that the logic you were using with the Coulombic thing was that you were saying that because the cutoff was bigger than the bound state,
yeah,
that you could do the calculation without the Coulomb thing.
Yeah.
And then the infrared.
And it turns out not to work, right? Because again, you will have some A dependence, roughly speaking. You have a matrix element, right, between Coulomb state. And this matrix element, which is Coulombic, right, non-perturbative, it has some dependence on A. Right? So you cannot compute this dependence perturbatively order by order in A.
Supposing you've done the calculation instead of that way, you've taken the Coulomb state and returned around it.
Yeah.
And then you did the matching with that. So the infrared thing
doesn't arise in that case. Sorry,
does
it doesn't work. Yeah, it doesn't work. Yes. Yeah. So if you just plug it in and look at what you have still residual A dependence which is sufficiently strong, right? So it doesn't kill. I mean, otherwise, of course, and this is because you have an additional A dependence, not from loop by loop thing, but roughly speaking from the matrix element.
But I thought what was confusing me is that you at the very beginning when you said the reason it's hard to do this in lattice is there's a hierarchy of scales and you need a lot of dynamic
range.
Then you put your lattice in the middle.
Yeah.
And I thought the continuum limit was going to mean that you wanted your lattice size to be very small compared to the Q-C size, not compared to M. So why can't we work in this limit where AM is large, but A times lambda Q-C is small?
This is what you do. You extrapolate to small a. You cannot perform the calculation. Look, I mean, this is a very funny idea. I mean,
small a compared to 1/11.
In principle, yeah. Just a moment, right? In principle, what you can do, you can if you just work in finite order of perturbation theory, right? So you compute it as an expansion. You have 1/m a something like this, right? So singular terms. You just add everything, right? And you see that a dependence of the matrix element, right, or whatever, of the soft part, is completely canceled, right? But it will be only true. You cannot do this, right? You cannot do this because lattice includes everything. Yeah.
I think there's a theory meeting here in 10 minutes.
Ah, okay. So I have to go on. But the idea is that in principle, you can also, since there is one very specific term here, which is proportional to the first power of a. And this is so-called linear Coulomb artifact. And the origin of this guy is very, very specific. You remember this term, which was proportional to 1/λ. So, and this 1/λ is a kind of a signal of Coulomb singularity. And if you, it basically comes from the linear integral dk over k squared from lambda. And obviously, if you are on the lattice, so you have an ultraviolet cutoff, which is 1/a. So if you get 1/λ, you will get a times m to the first power in your matching coefficient, right? And since the lattice Feynman rules, they basically analytic in a squared, this is only one source of the linear term, and you can estimate it. You can just take the continuum integral, impose this cutoff with the Brillouin zone, and get the coefficient in front of the linear term, which is also pretty close to what we can extract from the data. And now, like the difference, if you just compare the difference of two approaches, you can see this is the numerical matching. This is the expansion about continuum limit, and this is the like d equal to zero, right? So no four fermion interaction at all. So, and the question is, like, I mean, what people then do to like they extrapolate to small a, right? To small, I mean, to zero a, roughly speaking. Using linear fit in a squared. So basically, what they suppose that like after introducing this Wilson coefficient, like the only remaining dependence of the lattice data on A is quadratic, which is a kind of a natural suggestion because you use improved action, right? So everything should be go to a continuum limit as A squared, not as A, right? So. And here comes the problem, right? Because like you should ask whether only after introduction of the of this linear artifact in Wilson coefficient, the remaining dependence of the lattice data on A is quadratic, or you just do not introduce any linear term in the Wilson coefficient, and then you have a quadratic dependence on A, right? So like because I mean. Like this and this guys, they differ by linear function, and of course, only one of them will give a correct result when you extrapolate it with linear fit in A squared, right? So and so the question is whether there is a linear dependence of the bare lattice data, non-renormalized lattice data, on A, right? So and how can one like basically answer this? And as I mentioned, these linear terms they come from Coulombic effect, and as I already mentioned as well, right, that Coulombic effects are non-perturbative. So basically, you have all order contribution, right? So like an infinite number of Coulomb exchanges contribution to any coefficient d. Right, like, and in particular to the coefficient of the linear term, because I mean, if you look here, right, so in physical situation here, it's not lambda, it's alpha, right? So the Coulomb contribution is a kind of non-suppressed by alpha, right? So you don't have standard power counting, so you have to take into account everything non-perturbative, right? So how can we answer the question, right? How can we answer the question whether the real unrenormalized lattice data depend on linearly on A or not, right? So do we have to introduce linear contribution to the Wilson coefficient or not? And actually, the only way to do this is basically we can basically put our Schrödinger equation on the finite lattice, solve it numerically, and look how the result depends on A. Because this is actually, I mean, what lattice QCD, if you completely forget about non-perturbative effect at the scale of lambda QCD, this is, I mean, you can just get the lattice data by solving the Schrödinger equation, or you can just think that the functional integral on the lattice, right, it basically gives you the solution of the Schrödinger equation, right? So, you can just do this, right? You can emulate lattice by numerical solution of the Schrödinger equation on the lattice and looking at how the result depends on. So, and actually all the diagrams which produce these linear terms, they will be sitting in the parameters of the Kvarkonium, right? And in particular, in our case, when we consider the hyperfine splitting, you can just see that if you look at this operator, right? For fermion operator, it's just delta function, right? So it's local interaction. So when you take the matrix element of it, you get wave function at the origin. So all these diagrams, all the diagrams which produces the linear artifact, right? They are like, I mean, similar to this one, right? So you have a spin flip delta function interaction, and then you have Coulomb gluon, and you can add more and more and more and more Coulomb gluons, right? But if you sum up all the Coulomb ladders right here, you, what you get, since this is delta function, you will get the wave function as the origin, right? So all this linear Coulomb artifact, if there is any, they will be sitting in this wave function as the origin, right? So, and you can do this, right? I mean, you can.
Is there perturbative contribution?
Yes, of course, yeah. But yeah, we are interested because all these artifacts, they're non-perturbative in a sense, because they're Coulombic, right? But they're perturbative in a sense that they have nothing to do with lambda QCD, right?
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There are, of course, yeah, but no, there are no linear terms, right? There are no linear non-perturbative terms, right? So it's like, again, the only reason why you have linear terms is because you have Coulomb singularity. So, and in QCD, I mean, in this soft gluon exchange, very soft, so you don't have it, right? So, and you can just make this exercise, and this is what we did, and you find that, you can just actually get even the analytical result here by numerical guess, right? Like by guess, very high precision numerical result, right? I mean, you see that just one half, right? And A here is a dimensionless lattice spacing, like basically measured in Coulombic units, because if you consider the purely Coulombic Schrödinger equation, everything is dimensionless, right? So if you measure everything in atomic units, right? So you see that there is no linear artifact, and moreover, if you look at this coefficient, it basically gives you the slope of the data. And if you look at the slope, you can actually immediately reproduce it, right? So you can predict the slope of the lattice data. And that's basically it, right? So let me wrap it up. So if you bring it down, so basically this means that there are no linear artifacts and one has to expand above the continuum limit. That's it, right? So, and this here you have the list of the results, right? Here you have the list of the results, most precise one. So this is experimental, most precise experimental value from Biele. This is perturbative QCD. This is our result, lattice non-reductive QCD. And this is very recent result from the full QCD. I mean, they cannot simulate a big quark because it's too heavy. What they do, they simulate lighter quarkonium and then extrapolate to the physical value of the B mass, right, of MB. And they get the result which is practically equivalent to what we get in non-relativistic lattice QCD, right? So, and here, here is the conclusion, right? So basically, what is nice about this work is that we formulate a kind of systematic matching procedure for the lattice non-relativistic QCD, which accurately takes into account the lattice artifact, right? Linear lattice artifact, which are spurious, as we have already seen, right? And if you look at the numbers, so we see now a kind of a puzzle gun, right? So continuum lattice and experimental result are in very good agreement. And in a sense, QCDC. So, and that's it. So.
Could you
talk
for the last slide? Maybe
yeah.
Yeah.
This one.
This.
Yeah, so like, I mean, so basically this is, this quantity would give you, you see, I mean, this is a dependence of, like you solve it for Schrödinger equation on the lattice and you see how this quantity depends on the lattice spacing, right? And you basically, the hyperfine splitting is proportional to this quantity, right? Because it's a delta function, right? You take the matrix element, you get like this guy, literally, right? So you have this coefficient here, you can just get it, right? And then you can compare because this is in Coulomb units and Coulomb units is M alpha over 2, right? So you can just basically find how many MeV
And you see it's negative, right? It's negative, and here you have this coefficient, right? You can just figure it out. And if you compare it to this data, right? It just goes like this, right? So it's a kind of, I mean, for me, it was a kind of amazing that you can predict the dependence of the lattice data on the lattice spacing. You are not completely, I mean, there is some, it's not like, I mean, you can't predict it completely because there are contributions, of course, lambda QCD squared times A squared, right? But lambda QCD, if you compare it to the Coulomb units is like, Coulomb scale here is about 2 GeV. So you compare 2 GeV and, I don't know, 400 MeV, right? And you square it. So you see that basically this should be given by this Coulomb artifact, right? And it is given by the Coulomb artifact, which is a kind of, yeah. So like, it turns out that we can compute analytically all the coefficients which they have on the lattice with very good accuracy, right? So it's a kind of, yeah. Quite a non-trivial. And it turns out to be not so difficult, after all.
The bottom line is that what they're seeing is the wave function of the earth.
Sorry?
Bottom line is that the lattice artifact dependence that they see is due to the wave function of the earth.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, of course. And you can just think, how can you get the linear dependence on A on the lattice if you use improved action, right? Like if you use symmetric difference. There is no way, right? It's a kind of artifact that you pick up one loop, right? In one loop, you have linear artifact, but you have a contribution which behaves like A, obviously from all loops, it's Coulomb, right? So when you plug it in, right, you actually spoil everything because instead of quadratic dependence, you have linear dependence. if you add linear term to the Wilson coefficient, you see. So. It's different, yeah. It's different in one loop, yeah. I agree, yeah. I can tell you. I know with Peter, right? There is a difference, right? And if you there is a difference. There is a difference between lattice and.
How about if I collect my question? So,
yeah.
Since you're on this slide. So
yeah.
Why are you?
Oh, exactly because of this, because the terms which are suppressed by A get a contribution which is non-perturbative.
So I should let you answer the question. But on this plot, I mean, the NRQCD is a theory with the cutoff in it. I should not be able to go all the way to
yes,
the
yeah.
on this plot.
Yeah, there and the construction, yeah, exactly, yes. Yeah. So that is true, right? But you have, I mean, again, this is, you cannot go to A equal to zero. Why?
So
because you have.
I'm going to do matching for your
yeah.
Wilson coefficient. And that is just some result. And why would I
just because, again, I mean, look, I mean, in principle, you can. Look. You can extrapolate. You almost can extrapolate to A equal to zero. Suppose the mass is extremely large, right? So you can go all the way. Suppose the mass goes to infinity, right? So you can just go A equal to zero, which is still smaller than one over like which is A is still larger than one over M, right? So in this way, you completely remove a kind of a lattice artifact which you have in your theory, but you do not introduce the terms which are like spoil the behavior, which are singular, which are like 1 over ma, right? So there is no problem here. So basically, I mean, like, suppose, yeah, so you may extrapolate, I mean, so suppose 1 over m is somewhere here, or even here, right? So you can extrapolate all the way almost to zero, right? And it will be the correct result because the A dependence of the soft part is a kind of, yeah.
Well, you still need the separation of
large scale.
So
no, just think, yeah, just think, suppose that suppose you consider, again, consider the limit when 1 over A goes to zero, right?
Yeah.
And then you can do this extrapolation.
So can I put some words yeah? on that in a way that Ray yeah. might like better? So why can't you look at a limit where M is arbitrarily large and you've got the QC scale fixed? And then you choose, so then as you make M bigger, you'll make A smaller and you can still make AM large. So, but then if you put yourself in a limit now where the cutoff is below the optimal wavelength, like there the four radius. So
Frankly, I mean, just to be completely honest, right? I mean, so of course you can extrapolate here, only up to the
people are upset yeah. is to take a zero compared to m, but what you really want to do is take a zero compared to lambda, right? Because what you want is the continuing moment of the QCD part.
Yeah, that's true. And
what you could naturally have is based on the origin. If you did the in the UV part, you solve the Schrodinger problem basically and perturb around the.
Yeah, the bad coefficients which we are dealing with are purely Coulombic. I mean, these terms, this M, the linear term, right? The linear artifact, which makes this problem, right? So it's purely Coulombic.
I'm trying to describe calculations. I think your calculation, some words that your calculation would go over. What's confusing me mostly in this is that there is actually three scales of the problem. There's A, the QCD scale, and M. And we're talking about points A and M. And then it's a paradox because we know AM is large and we get A small. But what you really want is A small compared to one over lambda, not AM small.
No, like, I mean, the idea here is very simple. There is a dependence, the dependence on A, I mean, even if you, like, why you have to do this, right? Why you have to extrapolate? Because you have an A dependence of the lattice data, which comes, like, which is a kind of Coulombic, right? And which is non-perturbative as well, which is lambda A, right?
But lambda QCD. Say that you won't go to as small A as that you want the continuum limit.
So yeah, but I mean again, you go to the continuum limit. I mean, why you do not have the continuum limit? You do not have continuum limit because of terms which are like in principle can be renormalized. It's 1/MA, right? Terms. So order by order in perturbation theory, you can renormalize them. And then perform the continuum limit, and everything will be, it's just removing the cutoff in your effective theory, which is perfectly okay.
This is not the calculation you're describing, but as a calculation you could have done is you could have taken the UV theory to be the Coulomb problem where you actually perturb around the Coulomb solution.
Yeah.
Linear energy will have the wave function of the origin in it.
Yeah. You can do this, yeah, absolutely. Yes, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the continuum would be that lambda A goes to zero, where lambda is QCD scale. But you're still choosing M to be huge.
So yeah. I mean, this is a way. Yeah, in principle, you should basically what you should do, do the matching to the Coulomb solution. Exactly, and. Absolutely right. Yes. So, but I mean, it's a kind of, and this is what we are doing. I mean, this is exactly, roughly speaking, you have this coefficient, right? And if you add it to the Wilson coefficient, so what happens? Maybe actually this is answer to your question as well. So, if we consider this as a kind of counter term, it's not a counter term, right? But if we just add this to our lattice data, if you modify the matrix, if you match the matrix element, the Coulomb matrix element to the continuum, it will be just like this. This term will basically rise this point, and you do not have to, in this case, you do not have to do any continuum limit. Absolutely, yeah. So in this sense, this is the way to do. Right, but somehow, we do this because, like, lattice people do this, right? Lattice people, they perform this extrapolation to zero. And so it's a kind of a standard thing, right? So we do not want to kind of interfere. But in principle, you are right. You perform the matching to the Coulombic system, to the Schrodinger equation, and this slope is fixed, and you can pick it up everywhere, right? And only, like, for sufficiently larger A, you will get lambda QCD times A, right? I mean, it will go somewhere. So, but otherwise, it's exactly that. Because we, in principle, we can compute the terms A to the 4. So, like, I mean, we can match all the terms.
Yeah. And you say that numerically, it disagrees with the lattice
component. Yeah. So, that is a very good point, yeah. So I do not defend the kind of extrapolation to zero. I'm
so confused with the determination of a Wilson coefficient.
So it will not be. I mean, this is not a part of the Wilson coefficient, obviously. No, I mean, you can just think about this in the following way. You do have a linear term in the matching coefficient, but there is a linear term from the matrix element which would cancel it.
Well, of course, everything has to cancel.
Right. I mean, like, yeah. And then just because you see. I mean, when you put it on the lattice, you don't have linear terms here. That's it, right? So if, yeah, as simple as that. So if you use, if you perform the calculation with real, I mean, this is literally a calculation with Coulombic propagators on the lattice, you see, right? So there are different contributions there. There are contributions which comes linear NA, which comes from the Wilson coefficient, right? Somehow from this one loop. And there are other terms which scale like A, which are not associated with this cutoff to the Brillouin zone, right? So, and why do you think that there will be nothing, right? I mean, obviously there will be. And you see that actually the total sum in front of the first power of A, they vanish. Yeah, because this is the solution literally with the Schrödinger, with the Coulombic propagators on the lattice, right? So you just put it on the lattice and solve. Yeah, so, but like the idea is that you have to perform this Schrödinger matching, what we call it, right? So
you can also, you'd expect, you know, if you did an operator product matching, there should be powers that land systematically.
Yes, exactly, yeah. So instead of lambda QCD, you will have like Coulombic scale, right? That's it.
Well, I think the cool thing is you should pick up carefully, but it sounds like we should maybe the three of us.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Any other questions from anyone else?
I guess not.
Thanks again.